Hello and welcome to episode 4 of the SBL podcast. We are here in Westbury-on-Trim talking to 8 school business leaders from the southwest, and we are going to try, I'm sorry if there's lots of background noise, we're going to try to have a conversation for you about what's happening in the southwest at the moment. So the best thing to do is to go on a sort of round table and we all introduce ourselves and say how it's going for our schools at the moment.
Hello, I'm Helen Burge. I am a school business leader at St Anne's Primary Church Academy. St Anne's Church Academy in Westbury-on-Trim, and I'm also Deputy COO Primary for TPLT.
Hello, I'm Debbie. I'm the School Business Leader at Portishead Primary, which is part of an academy trust called the Lighthouse Partnership.
Hi, I'm Avril. I'm School Business Manager for the Federation of Wesley Infant School and Backwell Junior School, and we're part of a multi-academy trust, the Lighthouse Partnership.
Hello, I'm Julie Ranois. I'm Head of Business Operations for the Olympus Academy Trust. We're a multi-academy trust of 9 schools based in North Bristol.
Hi, I'm Christine Bell Chambers. I'm Finance and Business Manager at Wyvern Academy in Weymouth. We are a special school and an academy to boot.
Hi, I'm Debbie Beezer. I'm a school business leader at Blackwells Primary School, which is in South Gloucestershire, and I'm also the chair and founder of the School Business Leader Group for South Gloucestershire, which encompasses about 80 schools across the South Gloucestershire county to work, network, share and collaborate together.
Hello, I'm Jane Durkin. I'm the School Business Manager at New Sibland School in Thornbury. We're part of a new trust, an Able Trust, and we're just 2 schools at the moment.
Thank you very much, and welcome to our Southwest Business Leaders, School Business Leaders Network meeting. We're here on a Saturday morning in Grupo Lounge. All had coffee and cake, which was brilliant, and now we're going to get started. So how's this term going, everybody? What are you finding? What are the difficulties? What are you enjoying?
So personally for me, I'm studying, which has been quite a challenge. I'm fitting that in with 3 days in my job, which really isn't enough time. Unfortunately, this term has been quite difficult. We have a new system of monthly budgeting that is, we've only had training for about a week ago, and I have to present to governors on Wednesday. So feeling quite de-skilled at the moment, actually, and not quite understanding the system. And I've also, unfortunately, made a mistake with missing deadlines for an insurance claim, so feeling quite angst and felt like resigning, had to go to Twitter and say, I've made this mistake, do I resign, is it that bad?
We all said no.
But you do feel really responsible. So
have you got some support with that?
From Twitter, you guys, I checked in with my union. Interestingly, my head teacher is more anxious about it than the chief financial officer or the head of trust services. They were both kind of like, don't worry about it. But you do worry about it, because obviously it's a financial implication for the school. But, you know, mistakes happen. It's unfortunate in 8 years of working as a school business manager, this something like this has ever happened to me.
So what have you learned? What could you pass on to other SBLs?
Well, basically, I'd used the local authority absence insurance in the past, and the school that I work at now had always been self-insured because it was too expensive. So I looked, when I was doing the research, I chose a company that came through a broker because their costs were considerably cheaper than a lot of the other brokers have provided. But I think in hindsight, you really need to know the terms and conditions of what you're buying before you actually buy it, because the stress absence policy has stricter deadlines than a general absence policy, and I wasn't aware of that. I'm not used to commercial insurance, and with the local authority insurance and even with some other brokers, their terms and conditions are a lot more relaxed than the current one that I've used. So it's not just about the cost.
I think terms and conditions is one of those things, because that's really, this term really caught us out. In my school, we suddenly realised that a trip that we didn't want to go ahead, we couldn't get out of. They wanted half the cost, whether it was happening or not. And those aren't, that isn't the norm in trips, but in trip contracts. But actually, it was very clear. clear in their terms and conditions, and because and we missed it basically.
Yeah. It's finding the time to actually read, you know, copious amounts of pages of terms and conditions.
And I'm not legally qualified at all. I can only read them and take a sort of layperson's view. Really, are we getting to the point where we need legal support?
Yeah, I think being part time as well. It's with quite a large school. We're 450 at the moment. It's just not enough time to actually do anything in depth. I'm skimming the surface with a lot of the jobs, unfortunately.
I also think that these are companies that are marketing themselves as supporting schools, and I would like to think that they would then take on board the difficulties that schools have on a daily, if not weekly, if not monthly basis, and also the awareness of pressure on schools for funding. And I don't think schools abuse the absence insurance systems or services. No. And so I would like to think that they would be considerate of schools' positions. And I know that they say that using the reason that staff absence or staff working pressure isn't an excuse as to why you've not met a deadline. But as we all know, a week can feel like a month in a school. Also, a week goes by incredibly quickly. So, you know, before you know it, 2 weeks have gone by. Sometimes we think in terms of terms, not in terms of weeks. And like you said about insurance, it feels like it's just insurance. And if that teacher is still off sick, then you're thinking, I've got a bit more time, but you haven't. So, yeah, it's a horrible situation to be in, but please don't resign.
So what about anybody else in the around the table? Julia, what challenge have you faced this term? Or
so the beginning of September for me has been implementing a new catering contract. So we went out to tender for catering across all of our schools, so that's nine schools. One is an all-through school, so it has two kitchens, a primary kitchen and a secondary kitchen, five primaries and three secondary schools. And we've implemented that contract. It started on the 1st of August, but really the business started on the 1st of September when we've started catering. And it has been a challenge for everybody. It's new for our catering staff. I mean, we know all of our catering staff. They work in our schools, even though they're not our employees. For them, it's a big change because they've had to move from one company to another, so we want to make sure that they're looked after with our new catering contractor, as well as being able to get the food out and the prices right and the systems working. One of the big challenges at primary has been implementing a new cashless a payment system. We used the one with the previous catering contractor, but of course when they didn't win the contract after tender, their payment system went with them. So we've obviously had to implement a new system. So what we've tried to do this time is to future-proof it by us owning the system. So next time when the contract comes up for tender, at least we have all the catering system. We did have it at secondary, but we didn't have that at primary. So that was one big learning curve for us.
So last time your caterers, they would chase the bad debt, but this time you guys have got to chase the bad debt?
In our catering contract, since we've moved away from the local authority for catering, the chasing of bad debts has always been part of the catering's contractor's responsibility. So our schools do not actually collect any of the money for catering, and that was one of the things that we requested, that in our contract, that in our view, catering money belongs to the catering contractor. Therefore, they're responsible for collecting the money and they're responsible for collecting the bad debt. And that's one of the terms that we put in our tender when we went out.
That sounds like a huge job, doesn't it? I think our case. Did they all come from local authority into a new one, or were they all in separate, on different dates? It sounds like a nightmare.
So this is our second tender for catering. As our schools have grown, so when we started out a few years ago, we had four schools and we put them on a catering contract. And then as schools have joined us, we gave notice on their contracts and they added on to ours. So, for example, the original contract was for 3 years, but some schools might have only been on it for 1 year because we wanted to make it coterminous.
Yeah.
So when we went out to tender this time, all of the school contracts are terminated at the same time. So it takes a little bit of time before you can get them all together.
Yes.
So before, we've had 3 different catering contracts within the trust because of what happened when the schools joined us. You know, they had their own contracts. So we've sort of had to wait and manage those contracts to make sure they've all ended at the same time to allow us to pull it all together. It will be good. I mean, we've only been running now for 2 and a little bit months across all of our schools, but it does give us some consistency. It gives us one contract to manage instead of 3 contracts to manage. So fingers crossed it's going to work out for us.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Have you got a contract, an external contracts manager managing the contract, or are you managing them yourselves in-house?
Generally, we do a lot of our procurement in-house, but we have used consultants to help us. So normally the first time when I've been out to do a procurement, I often get some expertise in because it's really difficult writing a specification for a cleaning tender. It's difficult. I don't know what goes in a specification for a catering tender. Same for printing tenders. You know, putting that specification together is probably a key part of the tender, and therefore you need a lot of knowledge to be able to do that. So first time around, we have used consultants, but second time around, because we've learned from what we've done first time around, we've generally done it ourselves. Not always, but we have tried to do that because we've sort of upskilled ourselves to do that.
Hi, this is Debbie from Blackwells Primary School. So I work in a maintained school, and what we did is we actually signed up to the Southwest Buying Hub pilot, which is running in the Southwest. And one of the reasons for doing this was that our catering contract and our cleaning contract was actually due for retendering. And I have to say that my experience of using them has been really positive. They were able to draw up the specifications for us in a way that I would never have had the skills and knowledge to do, and they also took on all the responsibility of running the actual tender process for us. They actually ran a bespoke tender for us in terms of our catering contract because, you know, we were happy with the current incumbent and we did want them to tender, so we were able to do that. What I found really helpful was the outcome from the tender, and all the information that you get is quite complex, and some of it I didn't understand, but I was able to constantly use their service to help me understand it and help me make an informed decision with our governors. Our governors had lots and lots of questions on the process, and again, they would come back to us with the answers, or they would find out the answers for us. And I felt that as a result of that, I had a really sort of robust contract in place. And as a result of that, with a recent quite tricky HR scenario, shall I say, with our cleaning contract, I believe that because we had such a robust contract in place, the cleaning contract responded and sorted the problem out very, very, very quickly and very professionally. It was all sorted. And I'm not sure that would have happened before, because I don't believe that our contract was perhaps as tight as it could have been. So for us, as a single maintained school, I found that the Buy-in Hub really, really useful.
It's great to hear positive things about the Southwest Buying Hub, because I know that lots of people are saying, yes, we use them, but not actually engaging with them in quite the way you have and using their services. I know we have sort of registered, but not actually yet done anything.
I think our trust tried to use them for the utilities element, for the gas and electric, and I don't think it was a positive experience. I think there's a national contract with Crown Commercial Services, and it turned out that their costs were way higher than what we were currently paying, and it took us quite a lot of negotiation to back out of that contract. So in terms of our cleaning and catering contracts, I work for a trust that is now, I think, 25 schools. We were five 2 years ago, so we've grown really quickly.
Yeah, wow.
So we are now in hubs. So our hub pays for a consultant. They were the ones that wrote the contract, and we have meetings with the caterers and cleaners, and he joins us in our meetings. And I have to say, he's very robust. He holds them to account to the nth degree, even to the point sometimes, I'm quite fierce, to the point sometimes where I'm squirming, where he's literally like talking about pennies. So we pay for that as a hub, so we all make a contribution, and it's actually something that I wouldn't be without at all.
Yeah. I think as business managers, I think we all feel that actually contract management is a really specialist role, and there are a lot of roles that we do that we're not necessarily really specialised in. So that is why I feel that the more that we can share and work together and collaborate and support one another, that when we're in situations like this, that maybe we can work together in small groups to get the best. And that's something that we do in our sort of local groups, you know, like the Somerset Leaders Group and the Sackgloss Leaders Group, things like that. We can actually try and help one another and support one another in that, because we've all got different strengths and weaknesses in different areas. Yeah. I think it's really
Are we well served in the Southwest for the active network groups? I know that I'm in Gloucestershire, and we have a very active network. Is that similar for the rest of the Southwest?
Certainly from the point of view of Dorset, I don't find there's many active groups. I know personally I'm part of a teaching alliance of Dorset Special Schools, and the five business leaders within that group, we've only just started getting together this year, but that's just five of us sort of with a common aim of knowing what our schools are about, because we're particularly in special schools. I also join in with a group that is run by my accountants, our auditors. They're in Somerset, so I go to Yeovil for sort of termly meetings with them. But there doesn't appear to be much about in Dorset. And certainly from a point of view over this start of this term, I found it a much more positive experience coming into my second year. But I was struggling towards half term when I turned to Twitter and found you guys. And it has made a huge difference. It is that position of being able to just put a question out, or even just how I'm feeling today, with plenty of GIFs going around. But also, I think the biggest lift I got was actually being able to help other people last week when I sent some bursary forms out to three people who were looking for stuff. And it was like, oh, I do know about that. And actually, I am on the right track. So yeah. Certainly this sort of what is a small group today, much wider group online, has proved quite a positive impact for me, to the point of I've driven 2 hours to come up here today.
Oh, it's lovely to meet you.
No, but it's a pleasure to meet everybody, but it's also just, it shows how invaluable it is when you are the only person in your school doing your job. Mm-hmm. Unless you have contact with other people who feel the same, nobody else can really understand that.
Mm.
In North Somerset, historically, we've had some very active networking, but we have found that since the academy situation's come in place, it's been hard to get people to come along. And I think a lot of it is to do with a multi-academy trust. They're doing their own things, and people are feeling sort of segregated a little bit more, and they don't feel that they can come out to these networks. So we've been continuing to put networks together, and the numbers are just not coming out. We've even sort of tried to branch out to Bristol, to Bath, Somerset as well, but it's all the travelling and everything. And I just think that people are finding it harder and harder to collaborate because they've been pulled in different directions.
Yeah, there's advantages to mats, aren't there? And sometimes it can take you away from a network that is wider and with different outlooks and different sectors, different phrases, different views. And I think that's what SBL Twitter does so well, is that we're all there and we're all different. Jane?
I've been a member of two different groups, the Gloucestershire Gaspen group when I worked in that area, and now Debbie's SGSBL group in South Gloss. And as a new business manager, what I mostly got from them was access to a bulletin board, which is very similar to Twitter. So anybody who needs advice with suppliers or something that's happening in their school just puts a message on there and people reply within a few minutes. And it helps you with some of these areas that we're not so expert in. And somebody else, like Christine, had done the research on post-16 bursary, and other people at her expertise in other areas.
Thank you. Well, thank you, everybody, for that one. We can't have a meeting in November, although I suddenly thought about Purdah. We can't have a meeting in November without just touching on the election. How do we think the election is going to change our world? Helen?
Well, first of all, my son is very excited because he's going to be able to vote for the first time. So he is overjoyed, a little bit gutted that it's the 12th of December. And I think there is a problem for students who live away from home. They are going to have to engage with the process via a paper vote. So a message out there to all the young people who might be listening to the SBL podcast, register for a postal vote.
Please do.
And I would urge everyone to use their vote. Whichever way you're going to vote, just use your vote. That's my message about the election. I don't know which way it's going to go. I couldn't call it. I'm not going to pass any opinion on any of the parties. I think there's a big mess that we need to get ourselves out of. I don't envy the person who ends up in charge of it all, sorting it out. I would like to think that education is the top priority. You know, the mantra, education, 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 is not a bad one. Don't read into that I'm a Labour supporter, though, please. And I would also add that our most vulnerable children, something needs to be done about special needs funding. It really upsets me about what happens in every school in the country. There's not going to be one school that isn't impacted by special needs funding. And also the impact on their families and those children's futures. And I think that as a, you know, you, as a society, if you can't look after your most vulnerable people, then you're failing as a society. So
there's lots of nodding around the table.
Education will remain a political football. You know, there's promises of extra money coming our way. Whether or not that will be true, we'll see. If it does, then obviously it will be gratefully received and hopefully help us, that, you know, public sector workers to perhaps sort of claw back to, you know, better rates of pay as well for our staff, you know, in the NHS as well as education. And I hope that they do promise to invest wisely in the public sector, because I'm a strong believer of everybody working together in a society like this to get the best, you know, and our NHS is the best in the world, and we want to remain that. It's being eroded away, and education's being eroded away, and it's so hard to get back to where you need to be if you let it go. We all know that in our own schools, that if we don't keep on top of things, we don't keep on top of our premises. You know, we all know, we've all been in schools that just look really sad, really, really sad in terms of how their environments look, let alone, you know, what else is happening. And if you go in another school which is sort of bright and vibrant and new, you know, what a positive impact that has on our children and their staff. And I believe that every child should have access to facilities like that. And I hope that, you know, extra funding will come our way so that we can do that.
I know that what you mentioned about being set back, we had our IT down for the whole of the summer. I'm not an IT technical person. Change domain, I think. I'm not quite sure what it involves, but it set me back more than I imagined it would do. I was very positive for it. Change was a good thing, but actually, when we're in October, well, we're in November now, and we're still catching up from audit and the IT being down. It adds to the stress, doesn't it? The challenge of the role, Julia.
So I wanted to mention funding, because we're a group of us sitting here from different local authorities, and yet our schools are not funded equally. And so the national funding formula to be shared out needs to be implemented so that it is a fair funding system. All of our schools are based in South Gloucestershire, perennially one of the lowest funded local authorities across the whole country. So we still receive less than the national funding formula due to local formulae from our local authority. So whoever gets in, we do need to make sure that the funding is fair and sufficient for us to be able to run our schools.
Hear, hear. Lots of nods around the table again. Thank you. We'll leave the politics there and let that pass that back to the politicians. So talking about moving on, you've got a new role coming up.
I have, yes.
Exciting.
It is exciting.
Tell us a bit more about it.
I'm just going to wait for my stomach to stop flipping over. So I'm going to be Deputy Chief Operations Officer for the Priory Learning Trust across 6 schools, 3 secondaries and 3 primaries. Started in January, and I can't believe it, you know, that I've worked up through the qualifications for being a school business manager, and that my school have helped and supported that, and that now I'm ending up as a Deputy Chief Operations Officer. It is amazing. If I think about it for too long, I get a little bit emotional. But I'm very grateful for the opportunity, and I really hope that I'm going to be able to carry on making that difference to a lot more children now, and help other people have a good impact on their roles in their schools.
And bring other people up behind you. I think that's...
Yes, that's really exciting.
Yeah.
And that is happening already. And yeah, it's a good feeling, that bit. Championing school business leadership is really important to me. So yeah, it's good. Yeah.
Excellent.
Thank you for being such a great role model and a great inspiration.
Thank you.
Let us know how it's going on Twitter, because we're all really keen to hear.
Will do.
Okay, so the last question was, you know, has anybody got anything that they do want to share with the SBL community out there in the with our listeners? You were talking about training and your level 7, and how are you finding that? Would you recommend that was something SBLs did?
Well, I'm not currently doing level 7, but I'm thinking of doing SIT for level 7 later. I'm currently doing a level 6 BA, chartered BA.
All right.
Through the apprenticeship scheme with Serco. It's really tough. I think because we are a pilot study for this actual qualification, I think the provider is also finding it quite tough, so it's not been the most helpful situation to enable us to study. So I think there's 12 of us, I think, completing it, and it's quite time consuming. I work part time, and I thought 2 days a week was going to be enough to complete it, but I was very naive, I'm afraid. So
it's quite intense doing that kind of learning.
Deadlines are looming December the 13th, so yeah.
Christine.
So are you you're currently working 3 days a week and studying 2 days. Is that you fitting a full-time job into 3 days?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I work 12 hours Thursday because I don't work a Friday and a Monday, but I can't leave on a Thursday with anything that really needs to be done. Yeah. So I didn't actually study on Thursday, and that's what I meant to do. So I feel... time is quickly passing by, and I'm not studying enough because I'm working.
Okay, because I mean, that's one thing that I've sort of been considering in the last few weeks. Again, I've sort of come into my second year. I'm running with my own budget. My confidence is a little bit higher, but I'm totally self-taught. I came into sort of school business management about 7 years ago via an engineering route, project management. So schools was new, but as with most things, I just tend to sort of sit down, work with it, and get on with it. Software and things like that is something that I've always taken to really easily. So as long as you can learn the processes and procedures from someone above you, and you're willing to take things on, that's how I've always sort of got my positions. I've worked with someone for a year before they've ended up leaving. I'm hoping it's not me. There's usually retirement involved, so I think I've just landed in the right places at the right time. But I did put a question out on Twitter the other day, because I've got no formal SBL qualifications, and I really feel now that actually I've got the time to want to do it. I've got to a point where actually I feel I need it to progress, and certainly in terms of trying to push for a leadership position rather than just senior management, it's knowing what level to go at when I've got obviously previous experience and a management degree from somewhere else in a different sphere, but it's knowing what level to pitch it at and where to get that advice.
So Christine, as someone who's done CSBM, DSBM, ADSBM, and I'm currently doing my SIP for level 7 school operational leadership, I can say working and studying is really hard, completely get that, but I'm starting as Deputy COO in January, and that is possibly because of all the courses that I've done.
Yeah.
And I do wonder if I hadn't done them, where I would be, what I would be doing. So go for it is what I would say. Take the pain. There will be a gain, massively. I also would recommend that you speak to ISBL, what's the name? Speak to Louise about where to pitch your the course that you should be doing.
Yeah.
Having spoken to you before we start the podcast,
yeah,
I would say sit for level 7.
Okay.
but I can completely understand that might be too overwhelming to start
yeah.
with. But no, Debbie's agreeing with me.
Yeah, okay.
Nodding.
So yeah,
and
we'll sign you up now.
Has everybody always found their schools quite supportive in this? Because that's something I've obviously never had in the sort of 4 or 5 different places that I've worked. It's not necessarily been something.
Definitely
that,
need yeah. a supportive school.
Yeah.
What I will say is that for the level 6 that I'm currently doing in specifically, it's a lot of best practice, but unfortunately not always the best practice that happens in schools, basically driven by time and cost, etc. So the things that you will learn if you do CSBM, DSBM or the BA, it's about best practice, and you will find that you don't always have time to do what they recommend. So it can sometimes be quite hard to relate the best practice to what's currently happening.
I just wanted to come back to the issue of whether schools were supportive of your training. I did my DSBM level 4 when I was working 3 days a week part-time, so I studied on the other 2 days, and the school were very supportive, and it was useful for me to do the course for the benefit of the whole school, because we found procedures missing that we should have had in place, and it was a good thing to do at a new school. So in terms of finding information and sorting things out, the school were really supportive. However, due to being such a small school and having such a limited budget, they weren't able to support me financially, so I funded the course myself, and it was the right thing to do, because if I hadn't done that, I wouldn't be working where I'm working now. So
I think working for the bigger trust, they have to pay the apprenticeship levy, but I believe schools can or any business can apply for the levy now, even if they don't contribute to it. So
yeah, that's true. That was true in the school that I was training in.
Yeah.
But the requirement to take an apprenticeship was to be paid for 30 hours a week, and the budget wouldn't stretch to 30 hours a week.
Okay. Well, the one that I'm doing is similar to that, but they will stretch the course if you don't do 30 hours a week. So the apprenticeship part of the course is longer.
Yeah.
So
it takes more money.
There's quite a lot of money, I think, sitting in the government pot that people aren't accessing, billions of pounds from the apprenticeship levy that people are paying into and not using. So that's how I'm funding my BA, is through being an apprentice at work.
Certainly worth looking into that, yeah.
Yeah, we've actually got someone from our local authority coming to our next meeting to talk about all this money and actually how schools are perhaps not using the apprenticeship levy as much as they could. So I think, you know, I would encourage members to perhaps explore that for their own professional development.
Yeah.
I see far too often, I think, school business professionals that feel somehow guilty about asking their school to financially support them. And I think it's because we see behind the scenes, we know what the budget looks like. But you are as much importance as anybody else in the school, and I think that, you know, the right training can bring significant benefits to your school,
yeah.
Whether you stay or you move on and you train people up behind you.
Yeah.
Well, I think thank you very much, everybody. It's been a brilliant podcast. I don't know what the background sounds are going to be like, the jazz and Lady Marmalade and slamming doors and shouting children. It's been an exciting time, but really useful conversation, and we'll carry on with our coffee and cake. Thank you very much.